The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum of Accelerated Government Strategies, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Women of Washington is a series of weekly radio interviews with Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives, role models for the next generation of Washington leaders. Aileen and Gigi interview the most accomplished women in Washington who share their life lessons and secrets to success.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Today in the studio, we have Barbara Humpton, President and CEO, Siemens Government Technology Incorporated.
So Barbara, women are still very much the minority in leadership positions in the government and federal IT sector. You've been in the industry for over 20 years in very male-dominated organizations. Whatever made you decide to go into this industry?
It's interesting. I was a math major at Wake Forest University and really thought I was on a trajectory to become a math professor like both of my parents. But IBM, back in the early 1980s, hired as many math majors as they could find to get into software development. And when they brought a bus down to Wake Forest, I got on the bus. And when I came to Gaithersburg, Maryland, as a new hire at IBM, I got involved in projects that were dedicated to national security. The first work I did was actually classified. I can't say anything about what we were doing, but what I'll tell you is that we had a senior engineer in our organization who one day called the team together and said, our technology has been used to save a fighter pilot who was shot down behind enemy lines. And because we were able to give him instructions, we were able to locate him and saved his life. And that young pilot was my nephew. And I will tell you, ladies, I was hooked from that point on, realizing that this wasn't just high-tech invention of software. This was impacting lives. And that really set the stage for my interest in staying in this career in national security.
You know, we'll talk later in the show, I'm sure, about women in STEM and encouraging women into STEM careers. And we ask a lot of our guests, particularly those who were STEM majors, how we can get more women and more minorities and even just more people into STEM careers. And we've had several women tell us that one of the things that they've observed is that women and girls are attracted to STEM when they can see the connection between the technology and something in real life. So your story just perfectly illustrates it. That do you think there's a difference that boys sort of sometimes like tech for tech's sake, but girls like the results?
That might be. I mean, I think we're all a little different. And I know in my case, yes, absolutely. I'm drawn to what does this do? But the other thing I'm drawn to, quite frankly, is solving puzzles. And I love the interaction with a really hard problem, you know, working on it, maybe with a team of people, and then boom, having a breakthrough. There's something really exciting about unraveling a good puzzle.
Barbara, you are the president and CEO of Siemens Government Technologies. Can you tell us a little bit about them and what you do?
Oh, I'd be delighted to. Siemens Government Technologies has the privilege of representing the Siemens Corporation in its dealings with the U.S. federal government. You may know Siemens. It's a global powerhouse in energy, infrastructure, and healthcare. And when you look at what the federal government needs these days, energy sustainability, renewable energy, efficiency, all of these are things that the federal government is buying on a commercial basis. So the corporation established a special security agreement company, Siemens Government Technologies. We're incorporated in Delaware with an independent board of directors so we can handle those sensitive items for the federal government on behalf of the corporation. So on any given day, we have folks working on four continents right now in things like energy savings performance contracts or software upgrades for product lifecycle management for major platforms. It's a really exciting business.
It's a big company. The other day I was down at Disney World and I was at Epcot, and the World of Show Lights showcase, I'm sorry, is sponsored by Siemens. A big night light came up in the middle of the water at the end of the show. I've also read quite a bit about Siemens' diversity and inclusion programs, and am very impressed. And I read a quote by you that said you are a living example of the validity of these programs. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, that's right. Yes. You know, Siemens is engaged in a lot of technologies where, you know, any of us would look at it and say, hey, traditionally these have been male-dominated areas, electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, et cetera. The corporation has been recognizing the value of female leadership in everything from identifying more board members to identifying more candidates for management and leadership. So when Judy Marks was selected as the first president and CEO of Siemens Government Technologies and brought me on board, it's been an exciting journey. And then to have the approval of our board of directors to elevate to the position of president and CEO, I'll tell you, it's just a living example of the corporation's commitment to focusing in on the right person for the job, regardless of gender or ethnicity.
Siemens seems to be a perfect example of a company doing things right. You've been in the business now 30-plus years, a pretty male-dominated field. Have you seen the obstacles in the way of women outside of Siemens kind of be reduced?
Yeah, it's funny because if you talk to women in this industry who got started about when I did, you know, the early 80s, you'll hear these incredible stories. And we've all had them, you know, the classic, hey, I'm working in, an office location, and I ask, where's the ladies room? And all the men say, do we have a ladies room? I actually did have, along the way, managers who said silly things like, gee, you'd make a good math teacher. Don't you think that it'd be better to let a man have this job so that you can help prepare the next generation of science and technology people to enter the field, you know, things like that. I don't think people were conscious that they were sending these vibes. I mean, I don't think that there are many people who would fess up to saying, no, I truly believe that's the right way to run the business. But that's what we dealt with back in the day. And I will tell you, at the same time, I was dealing with very talented women. My first manager was female. My second manager was female. I worked for some really gifted women on things like the global positioning system, et cetera. So all along the way, I had those kinds of role models as well. So we've reached a point now where it's no longer surprising or shocking to have women in leadership positions. I think what we have to do now is make sure we don't get complacent.
Can you name some things that need to change to help that happen?
Wow. What could we change if we had a magic wand? You know, I think there's going to be some places where we want to make sure that we consider a broad range of candidates. I'll give you an example. There was a time at Lockheed Martin when it was many, many legacy corporations coming together, and in succession planning for key jobs, it could be understood that, hey, I've got my guy identified who's going to take my place. But what Lockheed Martin drove leaders to do is to create slates of candidates for every job. And in every slate, there was gender diversity, there was ethnic diversity, and it was amazing to see in a very short period of time the cross-pollination of skills, people moving from one business to another because they had the right aptitude and the right attitude to take on some big role. Doors opened up, and you may know, if you watched it in the 2000s into the early 10s and teens, you saw women rise to the very top of the corporation and still are significant leaders there. It's all done through just being open to a variety of candidates who some leaders may not have otherwise been introduced to. Powerful tool.
So, Barbara, speaking of companies where they have a good track record for promoting and having women in leadership positions, you also spent a short amount of time at Booz Allen.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had some great women from Booz Allen on our show. How is the role that you have today at Siemens different than the one you had at Booz?
You know, it's interesting. Most of these leadership roles actually have so much more in common than they are different. You know, I think that when people basically aspire to a people leadership role, the core skills are very much the same. The ability to listen and understand customers' needs, the ability to rally an organization to go meet those customers' needs. I think that's common. The key thing that Booz Allen, though, offers is brain power. It's a corporation built around supporting the federal customers' needs for really gnarly problem solving again. I mean, I'm going to tell you, that's the thing that I love the most about Booz Allen. Siemens, on the other hand, is a product company. And what we wake up for every day is to say, hey, these things that are being invented globally might help a federal customer solve a problem. How can I connect those products to the needs of my customers here?
Does Siemens do a lot of custom production or product development for the government? Or do you find that you're able to take most of the products that are developed for a broader commercial audience and then apply those to government problems?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. And actually, we've been very conscious of this. Our objective is to bring the best of the commercial products to the federal government. We have lots of colleagues who are in special security agreements where there's actual independent research and development being done for the specific needs of the federal government. And we think our value proposition is a little different. We're focused in on what's being invented for others, because we think that the less the government has to pay for all that research and development, the better off they're going to be. And so far, that's really worked out well. There are a couple of areas where we really do have to get in and customize. I'll give you an example. If Lockheed Martin is working on updates to the Joint Strike Fighter, and they're using Siemens product lifecycle management software, but they need modifications that only somebody with a security clearance can work on, that's where we get engaged and really make customizations or modifications.
Today, we're speaking with Barbara Humpton, President and CEO, Siemens Government Technologies. Coming up, we'll hear about Barbara's early years. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Barbara Humpton, President and CEO, Siemens Government Technologies.
So, Barbara, you mentioned that you went to Wake Forest and then hopped on the IBM bus up to Gaithersburg. Where did you grow up? Did you grow up around Wake Forest?
Oh, I didn't. I grew up in Lexington, Virginia. And it's a college town, as you know. VMI and Washington and Lee are there. My dad taught at VMI. My mom taught in the neighboring town, Southern Seminary. When I was a little girl, my dad took me to his alma mater to visit the campus, and it was enchanting. Wake Forest University is absolutely gorgeous, and I always had this image of, oh, this is college, and that was my top school to apply for, and I was delighted to have the opportunity to go there.
So you mentioned that both of your parents were math professors. I'm assuming that since you ended up to be a math teacher or major as well, that they were a major influence. Was there anybody else when you were growing up that you can look to and say, yeah, that they were a major influence in my life and the direction that it took?
Oh, heavens, yes. Well, Lexington is a small town. And in a community like Lexington, you get to know people in many dimensions. So my family had a close-knit group of friends who were involved in all kinds of neat things, whether, you know, sports or music or art. And then the other fun thing was that our teachers in school were also our Sunday school teachers or our coaches. And so everybody knew us as, you know, wholly well-rounded people. You know, there was one of my mom's friends in particular who I always adored, Betsy Brittigan. She had grown up in Texas and was one of those larger-than-life personalities and really just jumped into life and relished all the fun. Everything was fun. So hanging out with Betsy and her family, her kids, and we were close friends, you know, it just, there, everything was more fun. And I think that's something that stuck with me, is just the little things in life can be a joy.
Absolutely. Let me ask the question about your mom, because it is, we talk about women in STEM and these days, but back then it must have been really unusual to have a mom who was a math professor. Was she a trendsetter in other ways?
Oh, she was in so many ways, and I'll say continues to be. Mom, if you're listening, she's one of those people who just pursued the thing she was interested in. You know, she was the first woman to run in the road race from Lexington to Buena Vista, the neighboring town. She was the one who on Sunday afternoons was watching football with the guys while my dad did the cooking. So the two of them, I'd say together, make an incredible team. And you know, each of them sort of gravitating to their own personal interests. By the way, for them, music is also central to their lives. So my dad plays violin, my mom plays the flute, and a lot of the things in their week would revolve around choir, orchestra, and they pulled us into all those things too. And I don't know if you all are paying much attention to this, but the whole math-music connection is very powerful.
Yeah, I remember we had an early guest on the show, Linda Curitan, who was the former CIO of NASA. And she is a very, very strong musician and also mathematician, and made that comment. But I've read lots of research about that, that kids who play a musical instrument when they're young do better in math. The scores have borne that out. So,
mm-hmm. Now, kids whose mom bring home their math lessons to try them out on their kids before teaching high school classes, you know, that also has a big influence. So I remember literally sitting in our dining room while she rolled film of, you know, here's a movie that describes calculus. And, you know, we kids were absorbing all of this stuff and wondering, oh, yeah, I guess this is kind of interesting. Yeah.
And so probably it was just something. How about your siblings? Did they end up in math or math related fields as well?
Well, you know, it's interesting. My sister actually has gone on and gotten a degree in divinity. She says that math was not one of her favorite things, but I think she's a closet gifted one there. My brother, he just could not get enough of anything technical. I mean, if it needs to be taken apart, figured out, and put back together again, he's got that gift. So everything from, he lives in Lexington close to my parents. He rebuilt a log cabin and, you know, built his own cabinets, put together all of the systems inside the house. He's just one of those folks to be able to tackle things.
Barbara, I'm going to take a step back for a moment. Earlier in the show, we talked about your time at Booz Allen and your very long career at Lockheed Martin. And you mentioned Lockheed Martin is a very supportive company for diversity, as well as Siemens. It's a company run by a woman, Marilyn mm-hmm. Hewson, which is a rarity in the aerospace and defense industry. Tell us about your time at Lockheed Martin a little bit more about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see. So it was IBM when I got started. IBM sold its federal business to Loral. Loral and Lockheed Martin merged. So we became part of that huge family, a very diverse but in many, many ways similar federal business that ultimately became Lockheed Martin. And all of that change happened during that point in my career when I was learning to move from the individual contributor to the leader of others to the leader of a business. And it was fascinating to see the kind of leadership training the organization offered. You know, we look at it now, you'll see a lot of folks from Lockheed Martin around town in very significant positions. And I think a lot of that is because of that foundation that the, you know, the various IBM, GE, Ford Air, all that heritage provided to people. We learned at a very young age in our careers, people come first, you know, manage people. And the business framework is important. Have integrity, make aggressive commitments, and then follow through on your commitments, meet those commitments for customers. All of those core lessons of management and leadership were very strong there, imprinted on all of us, sometimes through very formal programs, IBM, GE both had management training courses where people actually went away and had a very intense experience as new managers. And then a whole lot of just on the job, where it was expected that the more senior leaders were spending time meeting with the emerging leaders in the organization and working through business problems with them, you know, advising them on you know, things that they were working on in their projects. Sometimes it didn't feel so good, right? Sometimes that kind of mentoring was actually packaged as things we called murder boards or red teams, and you know, where you had external, quote, external people coming in to examine you and give you negative feedback. But you know what? That kind of stuff really builds character. And it's that kind of investment in the emerging talent that makes the real difference and sets the foundation for the future.
Now, back then, there's something very similar that's happening today around the Beltway. You had a very strong, very solid culture there, but at the same time, there was a lot of consolidation going on.
Mm-hmm.
You went from IBM to L'Oreal to Lockheed Martin, and that's kind of happening right now across the Beltway. Tell, for a listener out there that may be going through the same challenges right now in that change, how did you keep your momentum on your career and actually grow with it?
Thanks, Aileen. That's actually a great question, because I think as people go through this, one of the things they wonder is, what about me? You know, how does this affect me? Now, as I was going through that journey, at every step along the way, I was actually engaged in some kind of meaningful project or business. And the number one thing was to make sure that whoever my new stakeholders were, right, whoever the new arrivals on the playing field were, to make sure that they got a good indoctrination and in-briefing on what it is we're doing here and why it matters. And typically what we discover is that whoever the new leaders were just wanted this to continue to be successful. So as long as we stayed focused on what we were delivering and stopped worrying about what was going to happen to us, we did just fine. Now, what's interesting, though, is that sometimes you can get in a situation where what it looks like is you're about to take a U-turn, right? It's, oh, man, I had been building this business, and I had dreams for what would happen next, and this isn't what I was planning. And the answer is, hey, roll with it, right? Yeah, it doesn't really matter what your plans are. Things happen. And what we learn to do is to keep our eyes open. You know, where are things going? What is this new organization interested in? What are the things that are priorities for them? And how can we make sure we're aligned with where this organization is going? And when we would understand that, get alignment, get calibrated, then we were sort of brought along with the business as well. At various times, sometimes you're the one doing the deciding. Sometimes you're the one getting decided for. Roll with it.
Today in the studio, we're speaking with Barbara Humpton, President and CEO, Siemens Government Technologies. Coming up, we'll ask Barbara about women in the executive ranks. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Frontal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Barbara Humpton, President and CEO, Siemens Government Technologies. Now, Barbara, in doing my research for this show, you are very successful and very interesting and get interviewed by quite a bit of journalists. When I ran VMware Public Sector, I always found that I got asked different questions than my male peers when interviewed. Have you found that same experience?
That's a great question. You know, I think I get asked more family questions than my male peers do. I keep waiting for the fashion questions and things like that. So far, nobody's been able to, you know, nobody's asked me what I'm wearing today.
Or how you're going to wear your hair in the case of some of our candidates for president.
Barbara, women currently hold about 16% of corporate board seats in the U.S. and just about 14% of executive officer positions. That's according to Catalyst Research. So if you look at aerospace in particular, less than 4% of the boardrooms have women in them. So you really have had tremendous success and shattered the proverbial glass ceiling. So do you think it's a situation where women have finally broken the code to the old boys club? Or what strategies have you used in situations where you are in that very, very male-dominated upper echelons?
Throughout my career, I've been in situations where, I'd be one of very few women. But the mindset I've had, I'd say from very early days, is that whatever team I'm working on needs more of what I have to offer. I mean, it's that simple, right? I've got this feeling that, hey, there's a job for me to do here. There's a perspective I have that the team would not otherwise have. And by Jove, I'm going to make the most of this moment. So, you know, whether it was, you know, leading a team of men who had, in essence, invented GPS through a total re-architecture and having to restructure a team to make it successful and deliver on time, the things that I was bringing to the table were things they didn't have, the ability to draw people in and the ability to set a context and explain to people what the objective was, et cetera. So I really feel, from a personal perspective, I've felt that I have something different to contribute, and I feel that now, about my role at Siemens and the role I play on our board. There's a lot of research right now coming out showing that companies that have female board members and female executives have higher financial results. Now, you know, you dig a little deeper and you say, what's causal here? And unfortunately, I don't think the research is showing us that yet. Is there something about the way women think, behave, act, that actually drives teams in a different way? I think what we're going to find out is whether it's male or female, companies that are able to inspire and motivate teams in a variety of ways, sometimes financial, but with so many other intangibles, those companies are more successful. The companies that take advantage of a variety of ideas, get lots and lots of ideas, filter out bad ones, run with good ones. I think those are characteristics that women often have, the ability to think differently and lead in that direction. So there's this strong correlation that's being recognized. And I think, I think that skylight is open. And I think maybe, I'm a big proponent of the idea that a lot of women just need to go for it.
What you're saying about the data that's coming out is absolutely true. And what we're hearing more and more is that the males on boards and companies, they're beginning to recognize this, right? Their eyes have been open to it, and they want to recruit more women and more minorities to have a generally more diverse population at the upper ranks. But still, so often you hear, I'd love to hire a woman, or I'd love to hire a minority, but, you know, or I'd love to bring them on my board, but there just aren't, you know, a lot of great candidates out there. What advice would you give to male members of those upper ranks that are looking to recruit more diverse population?
Yeah, I think I would encourage them to do exactly what Lockheed Martin did when they said, we want to blend our cultures and we want people moving across the business and we want more diversity in our leadership. I believe that people need to meet good candidates. I mean, the key thing is meeting them. And once you've been introduced to good candidates and have considered, can this person help me in my business, I think we're going to start to be surprised at how many of those appointments get made. I believe right now one of the biggest services being done for this community is the board search firms who are recognizing female candidates, advancing them, really encouraging companies to include these women in their boards. They are matchmakers. They're helping people discover each other who wouldn't have otherwise met.
Today in the studio, we're speaking with Barbara Humpton, President and CEO, Siemens Government Technology. Barbara, in Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, she talks about her career being a jungle gym, not a straight line. You stayed for many years in the same company, though it changed name over time, and still had a very rapid success with your career. How did you find that jungle gym of success but not change companies?
Well, actually, very much a jungle gym, I will tell you. And also my early instruction in this, you know, leadership development emphasized the importance of really learning the business from the ground up. So anyone who tracked my career in the early days would say, I'm not exactly sure where Barbara Humpton's going to end up because, gosh, to spend 7 years as a software developer, as then 5 more years as a manager of software developers, you know, it kind of looked like, you know, maybe what I would do is focus on, you know, those just staying settled in projects. But what I was being encouraged to do was truly learn the business from the inside out. You've got to get in there. You got to make some mistakes. You got to fix your own mistakes and then move on. And that foundation is invaluable. You just can't learn that through a series of rapid succession assignments. Okay, so, you know, love that as a foundation. But I'll tell you, the other interesting thing about many of our careers in this community is that there are a series of things that look like U-turns that turn out to be switchbacks on the mountain, right? So an interesting point in my career came at one moment where I was approached by leadership and they said, we just realized that the job you're in is one of the most difficult in the corporation and is an excellent training ground for the future CEO candidates, right? And so we're going to ask you to step aside and we're going to bring in someone who's in our top talent list. You're perfectly able to stay and serve as deputy as you like, and you can have your job back after a while. And I thought, what in the world is going on here? And then, you know, very caringly, they said, but if there is something else you'd like to do, then tell us what it is, because we are happy to reassign you. Because the important thing we're trying to do is make sure that a future CEO candidate gets the opportunity to do your job. I'm telling you, shocking. But, you know, you look at it and you go, U-turn. But my husband and I looked at each other and said, hey, cast your mind forward 10 years and ask yourself, you know, what we're going to be sitting around the fire saying, aren't we glad we did X? You know, what would that be? And it's interesting because that moment led to a series of decisions that quite frankly led to me being in this position now. And it never would have happened had I not had that moment of shock and awe that rocked me out of a position.
What was your biggest change or challenge when you went from an SVP to being the CEO of Siemens? That's a big jump.
It's a change. And I'll tell you, my predecessor, Judy Marks, was very open and very helpful to me as I played the role of chief operating officer in the year prior to my appointment. She actually had succession planning in mind and would spend a lot of time making sure I was included in meetings, got back briefed on major decisions so that I could have a good understanding of the business foundation, where it's headed. But you know what? Nothing takes the position of actually doing it. So in October, as I began my new role as president and CEO, you know, of course, it struck me that there are certain things that only the president and CEO has to and gets to decide. And so I'd say, you know, the biggest shift is that moment of realizing that Judy's not down the hall. Right. I'm not going to walk down the hall and be able to run some things by her now. So what I've decided to do is kind of turn the tables around and interact with my team in the same way. And so I'm not feeling so lonely. I'm feeling like I've got a great support structure around me.
Today in studio, we're speaking with Barbara Humpton, president and CEO, Siemens Government Technologies. Coming up, we'll ask Barbara about how she balances it all. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
A multi-agency center dedicated to combating the threat of terrorist-made bombs is closer to moving into a new home designed to help advance its mission. The first phase of state-of-the-art facilities for the Terrorist Explosive Device Analytical Center, or TEDAC, is complete. It will be located at the U.S. Army Post Redstone Arsenal in Huntsville, Alabama. Working under one roof will better enable collaboration between the more than 30 agencies that make up TEDAC, from the FBI to the military, FBI Director James Comey.
Putting people from different agencies together is the way we save lives. This is that on steroids.
The FBI stood up TEDAC in 2003 when men and women in uniform were suffering casualties in Afghanistan and Iraq. TEDAC was located in Quantico, Virginia, where it had to share resources with the FBI laboratory. The final phase of the new facilities is expected in 2020.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Barbara Humpton, President and CEO, Siemens Government Technologies.
So, Barbara, what is it that you like to do when you're not working? I'm sure there's not a tremendous amount of time with you fairly recently in your new role, but do you have any hobbies or special interests?
Oh, I sure do. And I told you earlier that I love doing puzzles. So I'll tell you, if I can sneak a 5-minute little mental break, you know, on an evening and work some puzzles, that's great. And I'd like to think that's going to keep me mentally sharp. But actually, my true passion, shared with my husband, is travel. We have traveled the world. We've visited all 7 continents. I'll tell you, my favorite is Antarctica. It's stunningly gorgeous and one of those true, pure, natural places on Earth. A real privilege to get to go. So, you know, we are constantly thinking about what's next. Our current plan is Southeast Asia is next. And if you had told me when I was a little girl that someday I would take a vacation in Vietnam, I'd say, are you crazy? But boy, we can't wait to enjoy the culture and the beauty of the country.
So how did you get to Antarctica? Was it just, a vacation trip that you planned? I mean, I met lots of people who've done a lot of traveling, but not too many that have been to Antarctica.
Oh, and in our case, it was literally just, it was a vacation. It was the same year that there was a Russian icebreaker that got stuck in the ice on the other side of the continent. The biggest worry we had was, hey, will the chocolate croissants be, you know, fresh for breakfast? It was a luxury trip for sure. But my husband and I have both traveled as students, you know, where we've gone and lived with families. And we love the, you know, total cultural immersion of travel. But in this case, recently, we only have time to get away for short stints. And so, yeah, we like to go in the hands of people who really know what they're doing and can make sure we have a great experience.
And I understand you have a new, I don't know if I should call him sort of a hobby, but a new element in your life.
How sweet of you to bring this up.
That's probably taking a little bit of your time and attention. So you became a grandmother recently.
I did, the 4th of November last year. So a really wonderful baby boy, healthy, the whole family is happy. And my husband and I had recently moved to Washington, D.C. from Maryland. And our kids, the parents, are living on Capitol Hill. So an easy bike ride for grandma to get over and see her grandbaby on the weekend. And we're having tons of fun together.
Today in the studio, we're speaking with Barbara Humpton, President and CEO, Siemens Government Technologies. Now, Barbara, your success is, as you mentioned, not only limited to your career, but you have a family and you're pretty active in the community. Now, how do you do that all? How do you balance that?
I think all of us are really, whether we're at work or whether we're at home, we actually are working in teams. And in our case, my husband, Dave, has been a fantastic partner for the things we've wanted to accomplish as a couple in life. So I think many of us have been through stages in life where one or the other of us is very, very busy. And Dave and I have been that way through the years. There will be times, we all know that budget time for a city manager is that, you know, that's when mom needs to kick into high gear and make sure she takes care of things at home. Then likewise, there are times when I was doing intense travel and he really took over and handled things. Probably the most interesting thing for me, and I never would have guessed this as we started our family together, is that it would be meaningful to the kids that we both had active and successful careers. So there was one point when our kids were in their, you know, middle school ages, when I truly was thinking, this is going to be a good time for me to step back a little bit and spend some more time with the family, help kids through teenage years, which are so difficult, And both of the kids said, "Mom, no, you love what you do. And it's actually kind of cool." And they discouraged me from taking more time at home. Should I have read more into that? I don't know. But I took their advice, stayed involved. And I guess the thing that you just can't see when you're going through these things is these things work out in the end.
You know, Barbara, we have now interviewed almost 90 very successful women like yourself. And I got to tell you, the high percentage of them that mention choosing your life partner as being somebody who can you can share your life and share the struggles and the wonders with is one of the most important decisions that they can make.
Mm-hmm. My mom said when I was, a youngin, she said, "You'll know you've met the right person when you never run out of things to talk about." And so Dave and I have been married, over 30 years now. And truly, we just enjoy spending time together. We are interested in the same things, and life is interesting with him.
So you're a partner there, but were there occasions when you had to make some tough choices between your work and professional life? Mm-hmm. How did your partner and you chase those challenges?
I will share with you that when our son was about 12 years old, he became gravely ill. And we went through a very difficult time. The sort of situation where it's so frustrating because there are things you want to be able to do for your child and you can't. Things that he needed to struggle through himself. And my husband and I found ourselves often, just at wit's end. What do we do? How do we handle this? In our case, we decided that no matter how hard it got, we were going to stick it out together. We know it's not the right answer for a lot of families, right? Things get difficult and they need to go separate directions. We chose not to. And I'll tell you, we came through it stronger as a family. It's not the sort of thing where you'd say, "Hey, I would put this on your development plan." I'm not saying anybody should seek out opportunities to go through a major family crisis. But I will tell you, I am thankful that we came through ours and it made us stronger as a whole family.
If you were going back in time and see your younger self as you were beginning to get on that bus to go meet the folks from IBM, what advice would you wish that she had to be successful in today's world?
The one core piece of advice I would give that Barbara is don't fret. It's amazing how much opportunity there is out here. And fretting, worrying about, are you doing the right thing? Are you taking the right steps? Are you working with the right people? Are you, all of that isn't worth the time and energy. Don't fret. That's what I'd say.
Barbara, I want to thank you so much for sharing your background and insights with us. Today in the studio, we have Barbara Humpton, President and CEO, Siemens Government Technologies. Aileen and I are founders of Accelerated Government Strategies. You can learn more about AGS and the work we can do to help accelerate your business plans for public sector at excelgovstrat.com. I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.